I think I did that right. I'm going to share with you my thoughts on the journey of the heart. And then if there are questions afterwards, feel free to ask. So being happy is a choice. It's a choice that we make for ourselves and how we relate to the world. It's easy to get distracted by work and duty and not experience joy and happiness. So as spiritual people, where do we seek and find happiness in our lives? Love is one's heart offers the capacity to love ourselves and love the world. When we embrace and take refuge in the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, which are the teachings of the Buddha, and the Sangha, which is the community. And we actually have a Sangha here. We are a community together. Let's see where I leave off. We are equipped with the tools we need to live courageously and with an authentic and well-lived life. The journey of the heart offers a radiant love and beautiful reflection to those around us. This is a life worth living, coming from a calm self-love. So the mystic poet Rumi said, "I look into your eyes and see the universe not yet born." So if you can imagine looking in someone's eyes and seeing the universe not yet born, shows the amount of capacity and opportunity that's ahead, that it's underdeveloped still in your practice. And there's the opportunity and ability to really make a difference. And I love that piece. The idea of this poetic notion is what others see in us as we live a meditated life, a life of self-knowing, care and compassion are both motivated by the pure heart. We must let care and compassion breathe through the true essence of who and where we really are, a place of liberation. Meditation opens wide the space for emptiness. Now, emptiness, I didn't mention in the meditation, but there is a state that we can engage in where our experience comes from a place of emptiness. That you can actually imagine and feel the openness in the body and the openness in the mind, and that they're empty, just working toward the emptiness in those areas of our lives and allowing us to engage in mindfulness from that place. Every time I talk, I forget where I was. Anyway, meditation opens wide the space for emptiness. That's where I was. It gives us a wholeheartedness and the capacity to love deeply. We were able to show our true nature, our Buddha nature, and our true beauty. So those are deep practices to recognize our true nature and to be in that place as much as possible, to walk with that beauty and walk with that Buddha nature is a place of loveliness. It's a lovely opportunity to, if you can imagine, be empty of troubles and be empty of distractions and the things that you talked about that you wrote, and in turn have the loveliness of our true nature, our Buddha nature. That's a place of liberation. So Thich Nhat Hanh said, to be beautiful means to be yourself. You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself. Even with ups and downs, we don't have to change who we are. It is a life journey, a passage with an open heart. When we feel that we have a broken heart, meditation with love and compassion is the medication that calls to us. Deeply practicing love in the heart and love of the world heals what troubles us. So this is sort of a list of the conditions that we can live by that causes the change in our hearts to love ourselves and to love the world. And having that feeling and commitment every time you meet someone, that you will remember the fact that you are loving the world, and that comes from loving yourself. And I said already that loving the self is probably the hardest thing to do. And that's why we're going to practice some metta later on. And it's something that we have to do on a regular basis to maintain that place of happiness and love for ourselves and others. Deeply practicing love in the heart and love of the world heals what troubles us. We shape clay into a pot, but it is the emptiness inside that holds whatever we want. And that's from the Tao. So the emptiness, if you can imagine, of this pot, this clay pot, that emptiness is the same as the emptiness of our mind and body, that we allow it to be empty, and as a result, our bodies and minds hold whatever we want, whatever we need. And it comes from practice, not perfect, but a continual practice. When our meditation comes from the heart, we allow ourselves permission to trust it and experience peace and great joy. We are saved from wild notions and intensive suffering. In letting go, we can experience sweetness pouring out of the heart and love as practice. And everyone suffers. Suffering is one of the things that the Buddha taught, that there is suffering. But there's also an end to suffering. And that's what the practice is about, working toward the end of suffering, letting go of that which causes the suffering, and working toward the end of it. And that's why I say, letting go can experience sweetness pouring out of the heart and love as practice, or we can experience. Feel the wounded heart that's underneath the addiction, self-loathing, or anger. And that's Pema Chodron. So she's calling self-loathing and anger an addiction. And she's saying to feel the wounded heart that's underneath that. We have to be in touch with our pain and our suffering. And there was a time when I couldn't come to terms with that. But then I started recognizing that something was bothering me, like any moment or any time I feel like something's bothering me, I stop immediately and I say, what is it? What is it that's bothering me? And then I name it and I let it go. So that's why I appreciate the fact that she calls these problems an addiction. and you need an opportunity to release those and then to go happily on. It's so easy to feel bad about our lives and find something wrong with ourselves. This is a distortion that blocks the heart. But each and every day, as we carry our practice through life, we need to show and express deep gratitude for our blessings. It is time to appreciate the wisdom of the heart. And the heart grows more and more wisdom as we go forward in life. The wisdom is there. You know, I think even my grandson has wisdom, and he's only 11 months old. But I appreciate, and his name is Solomon, and I appreciate how engaging he is. And you nurture that with your children. You can nurture that, and it comes true. Our nieces, our nephews, our grandchildren. I think that's our job. The naturally good heart allows us to truly love ourselves and others. The naturally good heart allows us to truly love ourselves and others. This shift changes our body, mind, and speech. It's a cycle of the spiritual life. So we are aware of these kind of shifts that take place in our lives. We can see it and sense it. The change, and it changes the way we think, our mind, it changes the way we feel in our body, and it changes the way we speak. Right speech, never harming someone when we speak, never, you know, putting someone down or blaming them, no blame, no shame towards other people. Or towards ourselves, to not blame ourselves. And each time you find yourself doing that blaming, you should immediately check yourself and say, no blaming, no shaming, and come from a place of love for yourself. When we develop positive beliefs and ideas about ourselves on a daily basis, it shows spiritual growth. And that's how to get to this place of spiritual growth, following these steps of emptiness and trusting the heart and expressing deep gratitude. All these things leads us to a positive place of spiritual growth. In addition to crediting ourselves, we can also thank our spiritual teachers for their love and wisdom. And I do that all the time. I'm really grateful. One of the phrases in Metta is focusing on a benefactor and, you know, being very grateful and thankful for that person's influence in your life. And so if you do it enough times, you remember it constantly. So I'm always in touch with my gratitude for my teachers. And sometimes we forget our teachers, those that offer us the best opportunity to know ourselves and to learn. It's the teachings that offer us the liberation that we constantly seek. Mindfulness practice keeps us in the present moment where we are awake to each and every feeling. And it's important to name each feeling. You know, if it's joy, you can name it and say, oh, this is joy. Joy is present. Or if it's sadness, sadness is present. Suffering is present. Pain is present. Happiness is present. And it gets us in touch with who we are and what we feel. It also prepares us to focus better on the feelings of other people and the way we influence their lives. So, as a result, we may detect spiritual components of depression or self-hatred. We may struggle with perfectionism, which we cling and grasp to wanting to do better. When we realize this, it becomes a part of self-knowingness and we develop resilience. So you're strengthening your spirit by recognizing, you know, this spiritual component that detects depression or self-hatred. And if we struggle with perfectionism, which I do, I'm always wanting to be perfect. And it's not that my life is perfect, but when I look around and see something out of place, then I suffer because I want everything to be perfect. I want my car to be clean inside and out all the time. That doesn't happen because the next day it's dirty after it's washed. And I don't want things out of place in my home. And it bothers me if my bed is not made. It bothers me when I'm thinking unhealthy thoughts. So I constantly try to be perfect in all these areas. And the suffering follows that perfectionism. We cling and grasp and wanting to do better, and we suffer more and more. So we have to let go of it. We want things to be pleasant and nice. We want to be responsible for our lives and our children's lives, but we don't want to cling and hang on to this perfectionism. Some of us think that love is either black or white, all or nothing. When I first started my relationship with my partner, Ricardo, 14 years ago, I wanted him by my side all the time, if not in my arms. I wanted both constantly. And it wasn't happening. You know, it would make me so upset that he didn't feel the same way. He's nice, but I found myself clinging to him and grasping. And this caused great suffering in my life. It was all or nothing. But through my practice, I learned to love without clinging. We all have the basic need for love. And so that basic need for love is not a wrong thing. But I learned a lesson from this. I mean, I was suffering so much. And then I started letting go. And the more I let go, the happier we were. He's very generous. It offers us true pleasure, ease, and comfort. It elevates our self-esteem to be loved and loved back. And that's what we need. That's what love is about, love. That's what life with love is about. Treat yourself sympathetically with loving kindness. If you are gentle with yourself, you will become gentle with others. And that's Lama Yeshe. Some believe that baptism is a spiritual awakening of love. Virtues of truthfulness include considerationness, sincerity, humility, love, and humorous engagement. We must see and listen with eyes, ears, and the heart. We need to remember to always practice metta, the universal friendliness. So I mentioned my grandson who was born 1-11-11. That'll be on his driver's license and Social Security for the rest of his life. My daughter and her husband are amazing people, but little Solomon just takes my breath away. There is love and wisdom in his heart, his very being. While my daughter was in labor, love arrived when Solomon entered the world. It was magic love. Even though it was a powerful moment, we surrounded him with quiet voices and warm encouragement. That was our welcome into the world. And that's totally how spiritual that moment felt. And all of us, you know, it wasn't spoken, it wasn't a request, it's just something that came over all of us. And that's, you know, really how I try to approach people, with that kind of respect and honor, as I have offered my grandson. Anyone here have that kind of magic moment with children and grandchildren or nieces and nephews or... Yes? Mm-hmm. Yes? Okay. Yes, it's wonderful. See the stars, the moon, and the sun, how they move in silence. We need silence to be able to touch souls. And that's Mother Teresa. I call it the practice of sacred, noble silence, entering the heart of life. This is a very intimate relationship with ourselves and the world around us. It's a natural love that we engage with compassion and wisdom. With this love, we need not apologize for our emotions. This is a divine love that allows emotional freedom. There is no shame in this journey of the heart. And considering some of the things that you shared, that you wrote on the paper, that leads to the journey of the heart, for emotional freedom. There's no shame in this journey. When you think of emotion, it's just another gift. Last summer, the Dalai Lama expressed his wish from Washington, D.C. He said, "I pray for a more friendly, more caring, and more understanding human family on this planet. To all who dislike suffering, who cherish lasting happiness, this is my heartfelt wish." And that really moved me when I heard him say that. Because he is definitely the universal spiritual leader that is always giving us the message of a more friendly, more caring, more understanding human family on this planet. And I appreciate those words. We must now ask ourselves, how do I love myself, others, and the planet? How do I celebrate life and love of the arrival of each new being in the world? It's simple magic of being in each other's new moment that heals and nourishes our thankful hearts. So let's take a few moments focusing on the heart. Inhale and exhale through the heart. Feel the self-love with compassion. And now focus on the person next to you. Inhaling compassion and exhaling love for the one you are sitting next to. for each one in the room. Inhale compassion and exhale love. Imagine yourself inhaling compassion and exhaling love. And now for all beings, inhale compassion and exhale love for all on this planet. Let's ask ourselves, may I love myself completely, just as I am? And again, may I love myself completely, just as I am? Can I love others completely, just as they are? So, did any of that speak to you that I shared? Anything that you could recall? Anyone? Well, I'll just trust that it did. That you felt moved by something that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And talked about pure and unpure thoughts and what are healthy thoughts and not healthy thoughts. And I think sometimes for me it's hard to tell the difference.
Yeah.
There's so many things going on that it's hard to tell. Is this a pure thought of what I want, or is this an impure thought of all the other things that make me think I want this, you know?
Well, and that phrase, you are what you think, is from the Buddha. And so if we think chaos, that's what we're going to have, you know, in our hearts, and confusion and or loneliness, you know, whatever it is, whatever we think, that's what we become. So we have to change that image before us and focus in on what we really need and what we really want. And usually when you get down to it, that comes to happiness and love and honesty and integrity. You know, if those are the things that we want, they will appear if we focus on them. So I can appreciate what you're saying. Every day I try to eliminate anything that relates to some kind of confusion, starting first thing in the morning. Or any chaos of any kind, I try to eliminate it right away. And make all my actions and feelings relate to my practice. And it's amazing how your day becomes really different when you're able to do that. And you have to think about it and, you know, maybe have a little conversation with yourself. You know, I'm feeling anxious, or I'm feeling depressed, or I'm feeling sadness, and how to release that. Maybe just sitting quietly for a few moments and releasing those thoughts, calling them up and naming them one after another, and then letting it go. Yes.
Yeah, I guess what's, you know, what I'm kind of in a bit of, not conflict, but just like wrestling inside myself is that, you know, sometimes there are days when I have not so good things happen to me where I really don't feel good. And, you know, I justifiably feel upset. I've got caught in my situations. It's almost kind of like I need to release this, but it's also for me to kind of, for my work has been to like acknowledge it, meaning for me to really let myself feel as bad as I need to in that moment, whether it's like it might look like having to face the level of depression, but acknowledge at least that there's that much pain and suffering involved within whatever it is, not to linger, but it's like this thing where when I've gotten to those places where I kind of take the story that I don't need this or release it, it's kind of this false way of releasing it for me sometimes where I can kind of mask it over, and then my interactions with the world is kind of like that same mask. I'm pretending to be happy, and it's like it's a pretense that I take on. And so for me, like where I'm at is kind of to discern, okay, when is it a realistic thing to really just let myself be in the muck of whatever it feels like. This past week over holidays was really kind of hard. Physiologically, all the congestion and all that stuff. And I'm like, I'm necessarily miserable. And happiness is not going to be the state of mind that I'm going to fall into. But what I can remind myself is that, can I be content in this moment, regardless of all the suffering? Can I be content with it? Like, I don't necessarily want it, you know, and it's not like I asked for it. But if there's a way in that contentment, maybe there's a little bit of, you know, opportunity to be equanimous with it, like, you know, at peace with it. And then the day after, a couple of days after, hopefully something, for me, I was lucky enough to have something shift. And yeah. That I was able to release, and then I did feel happy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like that. Then I can't be attached to the happiness, because then I'm like, that's going to go away. So that's just for me. I guess I'm wrestling with those concepts because, yeah, I don't think that resonates with anyone else.
Yeah, I get it.
I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, that's something that I thought a lot about, and especially the sincerity of releasing a negative or impure emotion, and I've kind of shifted away from trying to have some sort of forced release, shifting away from that towards just acceptance and acknowledgement, and not trying to push it away and not trying to put it in a box of like bad or impure or negative, but rather just to embrace it, and embrace the discomfort and embrace the even the labeling of it as negative or impure, I think is unhelpful, at least for me, because then there's judgment that you layer on top of, I'm having this bad negative thought and it's not pure or positive. But really, if I'm able to let something rise to the top and see it for what it is without putting this external label or judgment, I'm able to accept it more organically, and then it does intrinsically release more easily, and it doesn't feel so forced. Because I can absolutely relate to that feeling that you tell yourself you're supposed to let go of something and then put on this facade of feeling okay and moving forward with something that doesn't feel fully authentic.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's really good. Well, one of the things that you said about the moment, I mean, that's one of the keys to be in the moment with whatever is present. So if you feel a certain physical suffering or pain of some kind, that's what you acknowledge in that moment. And sometimes you can't do anything about that if it's physical, you know, except, you know, go to the doctor or lie down or drink some tea or, you know, relax. And but if it's something that is emotional or spiritual, it's important to name that experience in that moment. And I think that almost all the time, if you could do that in the moment that you're experiencing, don't ignore it so it just becomes a part of you, but noticing it in that moment and naming it, I really believe that it goes away. And the more you practice that, every time that kind of emotion or spiritual negative feeling comes along, you do the same thing. You name it and let it go. And it might take, you know, a little bit of time to dissipate. You know, I don't know, 10 minutes or maybe a little longer. But it does eventually go away. And we have to practice that. I have serious allergy problems, so forgive me. All this craziness that I'm engaged in right now. Let's name the moment.
Things won't go away that easily.
Yeah.
Physiological.
Yeah, exactly. So I hear you. I definitely hear you. But I, you know, I'm convinced that it's practice that we need to make the difference. And practicing some of what we've already done today, the meditation, studying the Dharma, looking at someone else's words, maybe read some Buddhist magazines. There's a bunch of them out in the lobby. But just going over someone else's teachings, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be Buddhist, but teachings that bring relief to our lives. And of course, the more we do that, especially if we can do it on a daily basis, the safer our lives will become, I think. But, you know, the things that you mentioned, that happens to everyone. Those things come up for everybody. And you can't help things that come up. I mean, this isn't magic, although I said some things in my talk about magical. But I think things can magically dissipate if we release them and name them. Naming them is very important so that you bring your consciousness to the issue that you're facing. Otherwise, it's going to go on and on all day long and sometimes into the next day and the next week. I mentioned my boyfriend. In the past, I've gotten so mad at him about something, anything. I'd be really mad, so mad that I couldn't let go of it. And I would purposely stay mad for weeks on purpose because I'm punishing him. But who suffered? He didn't suffer. I did. I was the only one suffering. And when I realized that, I thought there's got to be a better way to do this. So when those feelings come on me, I do the same thing. I name them, because it's in me, it's not in him, something that I'm suffering. I name them, let them go, and then try to have a decent conversation with him. I'm telling him my feelings, you know, I'm feeling, you know, whatever, and work it out that way. But my point is that you can experience something, and without resolving it, it will carry on for days and possibly weeks, whatever that may be. Anger, you know, depression, whatever. So, any other thoughts from you about what we're talking about?
I think this idea of naming is a big takeaway for me. And I think what's challenging about that is the judgment that goes along with it, I think. So for, you know, you mentioned joy earlier and having joy for our friends, sincere, authentic joy. And I think for me, this comes up a lot with relationships and things, where a friend of mine will find happiness in a relationship, and I'll tell myself that I'm authentically happy for them, but I think jealousy comes up, right? And to name it jealousy is, I think, it's hard for me to do, but I think what you're presenting is something that by naming it, it might dissipate and lead to more of an authentic joy for a friend instead of the surface, I'm so happy for you, I really am, and really am. How did you get that?
And also, okay, the other thing is, you know, I don't want to sound like a magician or something. By naming it, you may not automatically feel joy for them, but you'll probably feel, you might have a neutral feeling. You know, it may not be joy, but it won't be jealousy anymore. It won't be envy anymore. It'll be neutral, which is also okay. And you sit with being neutral, and you name that too, because it might happen in steps. So that's really good. That's really good. Taking those steps. And I like what you said. It's good. Yeah.
I feel like we put a lot of pressure on ourselves.
Yes.
To be pure, or, you know, have perfect thoughts. And by this exercise, it kind of allows us to take the lesson away from whatever situation we've experienced. And so you might call it naming it, but for me, I feel like, okay, there's a lesson to be learned, that this is something that I needed to learn at this point in time that will help me in my spiritual journey, or to be a better friend or person or mother or daughter or whatever.
Yes. That's great.
Yeah, I think in saying that we put pressure on ourselves, that makes me think, like, I think I put pressure on myself to be happy, and I feel like I'm failing spiritually if I'm not happy. And that's obviously unhelpful to me.
You would never have an opportunity to learn something or feel something different. And it's important for us to feel all these different emotions and to be able to understand the people that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, or don't deal with ever.
Yeah. Yes.
I feel like I'm struggling with right now, like, how much of this you share and how much of it just needs to be internal. I mean, I think it was a huge, you know, for a long time I thought, like, my emotions were just other people's fault, and, you know, whatever I felt, I, like, needed, whoever was with me, it was their fault, so I needed to tell them, hey, you're doing this to me, you've made me feel this. And then I think it was a big step learning that I have to take responsibility for my own emotions, that there are things I can do to deal with them, but I think that caused me to retreat a lot from people, because I would say, okay, I'm feeling this intense thing around this person that has more to do with me probably than with them, so I need to, like, go away and hide in a corner and process until I, like, have figured out the answer and know the right thing to say, and I don't want to dirty them with, like, my complex, you know, emotions. And then I realized I was starting to isolate myself, and I think partly it was a perfectionism. Like, I don't want to, you know, put my stuff onto other people, and it's so hard to figure out what's my stuff and what's not my stuff, so I just have to, like, be alone. And that wasn't satisfying. So now I'm trying to figure out how to, you know, be more with people, but when, especially if you're trying to form more intimate relationships, you spend a lot of time with someone, a lot comes up. When do you retreat to figure things out, and when do you just include the other person in the process?
I think, and this is just an opinion, I think it's important to deal with things on a personal level before sharing them, or at least acknowledging what it is, you know, being mindful about what is going on, what's happening, what am I feeling, and then being able to articulate that for yourself. And then after that, I mean, the problem may not be solved at that level, but at least you've acknowledged it. And then at some point after that, you know, it may be safe to share with someone else or the person that may be part of it. You want safety. That's the main thing. Because if we get really despondent about our emotions and our feelings, and we are what we think, you know, we become that very thing, it's not safe usually to talk to someone about it, unless it's a therapist, you know. They're trained to do that. But if it's a partner or daughter or son or a mother or father or whatever, I think it's better to present it on a personal level and then let it process and then perhaps share it. And maybe you'll share it in a different way because you've sort of processed it, and they may be supportive. It's just, it's a hard call because, you know, I don't know your situations, but I think the way you're all thinking right now is really right on the money. Just acknowledging, learning to acknowledge, and it could be, I'm unhappy right now, I'm not feeling happy, or I'm sad, or depression is present. Whatever those things are, we have to handle those on a spiritual level, I believe, and let them go as much as we possibly can. And then share them in a group like this, or share them with a relative, or a personal friend, or a lover, or whoever it may be. But I think we have to do our own work before doing that. That's my thought. It may not fit you, but that's what I'm thinking. So, right now, I'm going to ask Katie to come in and share the announcements and the Dharma talk. Donna talk. I said Dharma talk. I've already done that. And then afterwards, we're going to take a break and then do metta practice as our last thing to do.
Hi, welcome. My name's Katie, and I'm the events assistant here at Rockside Gear Daylongs and Classes. Wanted to let you know about a couple of upcoming classes we have. First of all, we are going to be hosting a New Year's Eve party here this year. I heard it was really fun last year, so I invite you all to that. We're going to have a lot of really fun people. I could list all their names, but it's going to be a lot of fun, dancing and music and jokes and a good time. So I'm looking forward to that. And then next Saturday, David Rico will be here teaching how to be an adult about spirituality, and continuing education credits are offered. And then the following Sunday night, Jai Uttal and Deborah Chamberlain Taylor will be leading an annual meditation and chanting for the winter solstice in the Upper Retreat Hall. If any of you haven't been to the Upper Retreat Hall, that would be a perfect time to go and see it, because it's going to be filled with beautiful people, and Jai Uttal has the most amazing voice, And Deborah is just such a beautiful presence, so I invite you to that as well. And then also next Sunday, Philip Moffitt and Lisa Dale Miller will be here teaching a day on bringing mindfulness and wisdom to your changes and transitions. It's a day long that I've actually been telling a lot of my family and friends about. It's something really to look forward to. Upcoming retreats, we have a special two-night retreat next month on the loving kindness and Dharma of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., led by Larry Yang, Julie Wester, Charles Johnson, and Conda Mason, who will be doing yoga. And then we also have a five-night retreat on essential Dharma for those who are relatively new to the Vipassana practice, and that's going to be led by Anna Douglas, Howard Cohn, and Sharda Rogel, all very wonderful teachers. Our website has all of this information, plus information on rideshare, carpooling, that sort of thing. We just finished a retreat up the hill, so we usually ask participants not to go up there to not disturb the residential retreatants, but today, please, we do invite you to take a walk around, and it's quite beautiful up the hill, so take an opportunity to go on up there. And also, I wanted to talk about Dana. Is anyone familiar with Dana? It's the Pali word for generosity. It is a practice that has been rich in the Buddhist tradition since and before the Buddha. The teachings are given on a generosity basis. Teachings are not charged for, so that way that they are available for all. We here at Spirit Rock do charge a small fee for our classes, which goes towards the administration. It only is a portion of covering our administrative costs, and the rest comes from donors and scholarships. But our teachers, such as Marlene here, they come here out of their own generosity. Our teachers are not paid. They come here to give their teachings and to spread the Dharma. So we encourage you to practice your own Dana. There's Dana baskets in the hall, and people ask me what is an appropriate amount, and I said the amount that makes you happy. It shouldn't be a financial burden. It should be something that makes your heart smile when you contribute. So if you feel like it, there are Dana baskets in the foyer. So I wanted to welcome you all, anybody new, and those who are coming back. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Katie. Thanks. So we're going to take a break. I was going to do another sitting, but we're running out of time. So we'll take a short break, and then we'll do some metta practice so we really understand loving kindness and how that's a tool that you can use in your own lives. So stretch and move around.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.